Hello, I'm Rhea Blakey for Discovery Channel. Our topic today is hormone therapy options for contraception and menopause. We'd like to thank the University of Virginia School of Medicine for accrediting the program. We'd also like to thank Bayer Healthcare Pharmaceuticals for providing the educational grant to make this program possible. Physicians, pharmacists, and other healthcare professionals can earn free CME and CE credit by registering online at discoverychannelcme.com and taking the post-test. All the graphics and references from today's program will also be available online. It is easy to log on, take the post-test, and earn free credit for the program, so do it today. Now, we're fortunate to have with us a distinguished group of experts in the studio today to talk about hormone therapy options. Dr. Barbara Levy, Associate Medical Director for Women's Health, Franciscan Health System, Tacoma, Washington. Dr. Julie Kaler, Professor and Chair of Pharmacy Practice, Butler University College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences, Indianapolis, Indiana. And Dr. Anita Nelson, Professor, Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA, Los Angeles, California. Thank you all for being with us today. During the next hour, we plan to discuss the following: the mechanism of action of hormonal contraception and its relevance to the menstrual cycle, different delivery mechanisms of hormonal contraception, including the specific risks and benefits of each method, strategies to facilitate communication amongst physicians, pharmacists, nurses, and patients, specifically addressing misconceptions about hormonal therapies, and appropriate options for hormonal treatment of menopausal symptoms, including indications, delivery methods, and safety profiles. Let's start off with the basics and review for your colleagues the physiology of the menstrual cycle. Let's talk about the phases of the menstrual cycle and the function of the hormones on the body.
So in a normal menstrual cycle, the brain sends messages to the pituitary gland, the master gland in the body, and the pituitary gland sends out a message to the ovary and says, begin to grow a follicle or a cyst in which an egg is developing. So follicle-stimulating hormone from the pituitary gland stimulates the ovary to begin to develop an egg and produce estrogen. As the estrogen level rises towards mid-cycle then, pituitary gland sends out another message that says it's time, the egg is ripe, time to ovulate. And with ovulation then, the cyst that forms is now called a corpus luteum. That cyst makes the hormone progesterone. The progesterone stabilizes the lining of the uterus, prepares it for accepting a fertilized egg. And if there is no pregnancy, at 2 weeks then, about 14 days, hormone levels drop off and a menstrual cycle begins. And that happens then all over again. It's a very even, normal cycle when all of the hormones are connected.
So the menstrual cycle is the target of hormonal contraception. How exactly do hormonal therapies work?
Well, they suppress that stimulation that happens from the pituitary gland to the ovary. So they break that cycle that's going on by providing daily hormones into the body. Those feedback mechanisms are blocked, and ovulation in general does not occur. Now, with the older pills, we're celebrating 50 years of birth control pills now. With the older pills, the hormone levels were so high that clearly we suppressed the pituitary gland. There was no ovulation, and really everything was very flat and suppressed. With the much newer pills and much, much lower doses.
Safer.
They are much safer, but there are also some slight changes in mechanism. Occasionally ovulation still occurs, but women don't become pregnant because of all the other effects. It thins the lining. That lush, estrogen-stimulated lining doesn't grow. The constant progestin effect on the lining of the uterus keeps it very, very thin, and so it can't support a pregnancy. And then the cervical mucus is affected by progesterone, so throughout the cycle, the mucus is very thick, and sperm can't get through it. So there are a bunch of different mechanisms of action.
Progestin is the dominating hormone in the birth control pill, in all the other delivery systems that we have. We add estrogen to that to help control the cycling and the bleeding, but it really contributes very little to contraceptive efficacy. So the progestin is our main mechanism of action, and we look first to the cervical mucus. And clearly, when we add on stronger levels of hormones, we get better control of the ovary. And I think it's very important that those are the only two mechanisms that we really have data on, and it's important for people who might be concerned about post-fertilization activity to realize if the sperm can't get in and the egg doesn't get out, the two don't get together.
Exactly.
And I would add to your point about the effect of the progestin being the dominant hormone within the combined contraceptives. Certainly in very low doses of progestin, it can reliably inhibit that mid-cycle surge in luteinizing hormone, but in very high doses, in the doses we see used in most combined hormonal contraceptives as well as in the progestin-only products, significantly impact that mid-cycle surge in both luteinizing hormone and follicle-stimulating hormone, effectively inhibiting ovulation. Mm-hmm.
Then does the type of estrogen and progestin or progestin make a difference in the mechanism of action?
Actually, no. Potency varies a lot. Absorption of different hormones are quite different. But what we've learned over the years is that we don't need huge doses of estrogen. In fact, estrogen is there just to keep us from doing irregular bleeding, which women don't tolerate very well. And it really is the progestin component that's most effective in contraception. That's been an evolution in our knowledge. We didn't know that in the beginning. In the beginning, we thought we needed very high doses of estrogen, which clearly we do not need.
Could you talk a little bit more about the four different generations?
We've seen various generations of progestins introduced on the market over the course of the years that hormonal contraceptives have been available. Specifically, the third generation progestins, norgestimate and desogestrel, are certainly less androgenic than its predecessors, which decreases those adverse effects that are associated with the androgenic component of the progestin. The newest of the progesterones, or the fourth generation progesterones that are available, the drospirenone products, are antimineralocorticoid products. They are analogs of spironolactone, which is an aldosterone antagonist. They are also antiandrogenic, which makes them well tolerated by many patients. In fact, one of the drospirenone-containing progestin pills actually is indicated for the treatment of acne.
And there are new generations of progestin coming out. We just got one recently approved that's a blending of some of the ones that we haven't had in this country before with ones we have.
Right.
And they're attacking more directly the endometrium so that it decreases blood loss and gives you very effective cycle control. So introducing new estrogens also. What's really interesting is that over the years, we have had a tremendous evolution in the hormones that are in birth control pills. We had a change in progestins through the various generations. We've explored different ways of using it. But the estrogen has pretty much always stayed the same. We started with a prodrug of ethinyl estradiol called mestrinol that got converted into ethinyl estradiol. But we've never been able to use estradiol. We've never had a progestin that matched it to get good cycle control. And what's really exciting is that we now have a new formulation with a new progestin that is strong enough that we can use a compound that has in it, and the label of it is estradiol valerate, but when it gets into the bloodstream, it circulates as estradiol. So the hope is that this is exactly the same hormone that women's ovaries make. This is what their bodies are used to seeing, that maybe women will feel even more comfortable using a birth control pill that has their own hormone in it already. It's not a synthetic in the sense that it works any stronger or has any more side effects than what their general body makes on a daily basis. So hopefully this will bring more attention and more comfort and maybe more successful utilization of birth control.
Anita, there's quite a variation in the progestin dosing through the cycle in that new pill,
right,
is there not?
It's maybe a dynamic dosing, perhaps, and you look at the package and go, wait, it's 2 days of this and 4 days of this and stuff. But that's very empiric, because what they did was they tried to match the progestin and the estrogen. They went through several different combinations, and this is the formula that gave them the best cycle control. And so it is going to be a little bit different than what we've seen with one pill being the same or just one or two different variations. It's a whole rainbow of colors there. But I think if women understand what's going on, only 2 days off without any hormones at all. So they've shortened the pill-free interval and gotten really good cycle control, and with estradiol in the bloodstream. Pretty exciting.